It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. The band's back together. Mike's back from assignment.
Yes, sir. I love these assignments, Sean. Yeah, it's always fun to come back, though.
Yeah, you got the coolest assignment. So we will talk about that in just a little bit. Also, we'll be looking forward to the G&D Outdoor Expo coming up in less than a week.
Yep.
We'll talk about that. One of the guests that's going to be out there is going to join us later in the show. And let's talk some fishing as well. He's probably, I don't know. So we could find out and see if I can get people to talk trash. We're joined by Walker Green with J&M Tackle. Walker, is Chris out on assignment? Does he say that when he's going fishing? Anything like that?
That I've been fishing? Yes, sir.
Chris sent me something like he was out today. And so what Mike Ward does is sometimes on this show when he's going, you know, out to Kansas or he's hunting or he's fishing, we say he's on assignment. So is Chris fishing really today?
No, not today.
Dang it. I thought we busted him. Okay. I was working on it. But good. Listen, we got a lot to talk about here as we are in a new month. Man, it's September. Let's talk about fishing and what you're hearing at J&M. First of all, I'm not a blue water expert, but I know that I hear more and more in September going into October offshore about white marlin and all that. What are y'all hearing at the store?
Oh, yeah. That water's starting to clear up a little bit. I was actually out there yesterday, and the water looks pretty good over there about 40 miles.
Okay, 40 miles southeast, due south. What are you seeing?
Over there southeast.
You getting? Did y'all catch yesterday?
Oh yeah, yeah. We caught some amberjacks and some gag grouper and scamp grouper. Bite was kind of tough, but we managed.
That's good.
Yeah. What about snapper?
Snapper. We didn't really try targeting snapper too much. We didn't catch many of them. Only probably about five or six snapper, but we weren't really trying to target them. We were mainly after the scamps and gag groupers.
Did you see anything?
Now they're in season.
You see anything when you're out there, fishing? Obviously, fishing bottom. Do you see anything? Grass lines? Any kind of rips out there on the water for the blue water folks?
Yeah, there was a couple. There was a couple of rips out there, and some grass started showing up.
It's just a thing that, like I said, I'm not an expert on. I just know the guys that I, fish with or fish a bunch. They start getting
absolutely.
This time of year. I get a lot more reports of the whites, I guess, like you said, maybe the water clears up or it brings those marlin closer.
Yes, sir, absolutely, yeah. Whenever that water starts cleaning up and we get some better rips and blue water starts coming in close to the bank, that bite's going to start firing off here soon.
So was it blue water yesterday, 40 miles out to the southeast, or was it the blue-green or green?
It was a blue-green.
Well, I mean, that's good. I mean, I'm sure, you're 40 miles out, you're close to the edge out there, so if you go a few more miles, it probably clears on up to blue water.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And just seeing it that clean and where we were at, I mean, all summer long, it's been dirty, and it's just now starting to clean up in that shallower water. So I would assume there's some tuna following this clean water for sure.
Yeah, Mike knows the second you said gag grouper, you had my attention out there. So talk about the gags y'all were catching. How deep were you fishing?
We were fishing about 200, 150 to 200 on those shallow reefs over there and the rock piles over there to the east.
I know that there had been reports, I guess it was after, was it Bertha or whatever that tropical storm was, that the grouper numbers had come up pretty good. Is that holding or is that falling off?
Oh, no, it's still holding. Oh, yeah, all the shallow water snapper spots, they're going to be loaded with red grouper.
Really?
They're here to stay. Oh, yeah.
That makes me so happy. It's time for me to wrap up the show now and go.
That's awesome.
So, you were saying you didn't do much on snapper. Are you hearing anybody, like, let's talk a little more near shore now. Are snapper just hard to catch right now, or what are you hearing?
So my last red snapper trip was about a week ago, and we noticed that most of the snapper are spawning right now, and they have all got eggs in their mouth, the females.
We've talked about that with Dr. Sean Powers part of when it gets tough, you say, oh, it's tough out there to catch them, that, unlike with speckled trout, when they're heeing and a sheeing, they bite a lot more, but snappers seem to be the opposite.
Absolutely, yeah. They're holding all their little babies inside of their mouth when they're sitting on the wreck to keep from other species to eating it. And they got to keep their eggs inside of their mouth, and it's hard for them to eat a bait when they've got their whole family inside, you know.
Yeah.
It's true. That does make sense.
Is. It does make a difference. No question about it.
Leaves that lull in it. What about just near shore, like on pelagics as well? You hearing anything? I mean, Mike and I have, you know, long been talking about on the show how kingfishing's been so hard the last few years.
Yeah.
Are you hearing anything?
Yeah, kingfishing's been tough. It's been tough, absolutely, yeah. And then mahi, it's nothing been too crazy. I mean, you could find a little school of chicken dolphin, and there'd be a small group of them here and there, but it ain't been nothing crazy this year, for sure.
Okay. Yeah. Let's come on inside here. And it's, you know, we're not at fall fishing. We're, you know, still kind of summertime water temps. Inshore, what are you hearing? Trout, redfish, you know, what's been happening?
Oh, yeah. Trout's been doing pretty good. They've been biting, schooling up over there in Mobile Bay. And then redfish, they've been absolutely hammering underneath the docks and stuff. I've been fishing docks lately, and we'll go catch 30 redfish in an afternoon, just throwing live shrimp.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good day.
Oh, absolutely.
Are they hitting artificial too, or just live bait?
Mainly live bait. I haven't really tried a whole lot of artificial, but just dragging a live shrimp on the bottom has been working for me so far.
Yeah, a lot of times when redfish is biting, they'll hit about anything you put in front of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can put a wet towel down there and they'll eat it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, start thinking about what they'll do. You'll be able to school of them. I've talked about this over the years. Mostly happens to be in the fall fishing the Delta, but you'll be fishing trout, and then redfish are mixed in, and they're hitting the rattle cork. They're not even hitting the voodoo that's underneath it. They're hitting the rattle cork themselves itself and taking it down. We're not far off, really, start thinking about fall fishing in the next month or so.
I'm excited. I'm ready for those trout to start moving up to the river and going up there and start catching some trout over there, too.
Got to get a little bit cooler weather. This 100-degree weather is not working out for that.
But we are getting some salt.
No, we're getting close.
Yeah, we are.
Yes, hope springs eternal for a Delta fisherman. If you're just joining us, talking to Walker Green from J&M Tackle. Let's also talk about what's happening at the shop Labor Day weekend. Y'all got any sales, any specials going on?
Oh, yeah. We got select pin rods and reels and combos that are on sale. We've got star rods that are on sale and select clothing. We also are running our normal hours as well, still until this weekend, until Monday as well.
So y'all, Monday y'all are closed or open?
We're open.
Open on Labor Day. There you go, y'all. You get an extra day off. Good day to stop by J&M.
Yeah. So what your normal hours are what?
So normal hours, like summertime, we're open till 6.
Okay. So after Monday, what's your hours?
We'll be closing it at 5 to 5:30.
Okay.
5 during the week and then 5:30 on the weekends.
And if a lot of people don't know, y'all do carry live bait, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Do you have some of the live bait that catches those redfish?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Yeah, y'all walk in and tell Walker, say, I want the live shrimp to catch. I want to go catch 30 redfish like you. Give me those live shrimp. Give me the ones that are preordained to catch those.
Absolutely.
You got them. That's good stuff. Walker, we appreciate you checking in from J&M, and tell Chris we said hello.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Y'all have a wonderful day.
Will do. There goes Walker Green with J&M Tackle. We're coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike's been on assignment away from Alabama. We'll find out details. So welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Mike and I were talking during the news break about last week's show when he was out on assignment. And if you didn't catch that, go back and check it out. My buddy Blaine Price from Paris Tractor joins me. He and I did talk turkeys for a while because, Mike, he's like us. He's a turkey guy. We talked about it for a while, but we did get into tractor maintenance. So 'tis the season. If you're thinking about, you know, heading to the camp, maybe you're listening to us, heading to the camp, going to get work done. You hadn't touched the tractor since last planting season. What do you need to check out? What do you need to service? That just go back to last week's show. It's posted on our, you know, anywhere the podcast posts, but you can get them from our app, the website, or anywhere you get your podcast. Just look for last week's FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors with Blaine Price. And it's a pretty good tutorial about what ought to be checked. And we did lament the fact that he agrees, and he's in the business. What day of the week, Mike Ward, do tractor parts break? What day of the week?
Usually Saturday.
Late Saturday afternoon or Sunday.
Yeah. When nobody's open.
That is correct.
Yes.
And so I asked a tractor expert. I said, in your estimation, all your years, and he said, yeah, it's from afternoon Saturday through Sunday. They don't break Friday. They don't break on don't break on Thursday. They break. I mean, I think most people who have planted at their camp realize this is the God's honest truth, that if it's going to break Saturday at 3 o'clock or something when every place is closed.
Absolutely. And then Monday, everybody's taking their tractor or whatever.
I know, but you missed a day and a half of planting. Have you been in that world before?
Oh, many, many times.
We're going to get everything knocked out
Friday
first weekend.
Yeah,
we're
going to
get it all knocked out.
and start to get on a tractor and there's a bearing out or something. Well, and most of them are closed on Saturdays.
Yes.
A lot of them are closed on Saturdays.
And you go, and if you're if you're up the country, like where you are, there's only, you get in the Black Belt, there's only so many places. There's so many people, but I mean,
And some of them open till 12 o'clock maybe.
Yeah, that's why I said 12 because
But it doesn't. A lot of them are not even open. They close on the weekend.
The tractor tire just never.
Because people like us.
Yes. The tractor tire always blows about 1:30 on Saturday afternoon. The whole thing comes to a screeching halt.
Yeah.
I've been there.
But all those shows like that, Sean, are really good. Like the show we do with Brandon Lunsford about trailers.
Yes.
And, man, there's so many good tips on that. And 1 hour is not enough.
No, it's not.
To do all the things that you really need to know about your trailer or your tractor. Or the shows we do with the boats, renting your boat out. And
And y'all can go back there. If you look, if you go at our podcast, our searchable, we will talk about Mike's assignment in a second. But if you go search, if you just look for trailer maintenance, you go FM Talk Outdoors and then trailer maintenance, you'll get those shows, which is, we talk about it usually before snapper season, before rodeo with Brandon. But anytime, you think all the focus is on our boats and engines.
Yeah.
Not what's underneath them. Listen, you need to do a little check on that boat trailer in a big way.
Very important.
Or your utility trailers. As we're getting ready to be hauling, side by sides and stuff to the camp.
Yeah, I'll tell you what could go wrong with my utility trailer last week.
Well, you went up to your place in Kansas.
Right.
So that's why Mike was not with us last week. He was in Kansas. Getting ready, camera hung. What would you do?
Well, we work, trying to get things ready for hunting season. This is time of year to go up there. Bow season and muzzleloader season opens up, I believe, the 13th or 14th of this month.
Wow, okay.
So, another week, week and a half, whatever, it opens up. I'm not going to hunt that early.
Right.
Unless I see a great big monster on camera, I might go up and hunt earlier, but I'm going to wait for the rut or get close to the rut. I mean, that's when things really go crazy. But anyway, that's what we do. We go up there and just get ready for the season.
What's it look like up there right now? Are there still crops in the field?
Oh, yeah. The crops are still there. They hadn't cut any of the crops up there. Now, when we were going up and coming back, you get around Memphis and you get around some of those places.
The areas we duck hunt in the North Delta, it used to be rice was something they got out in October, or if it got bad, they got early November. A lot of places, rice is out already.
Yeah. No, we saw a lot of rice, and they had cut some of it, but the corn they were cutting, right now. But
which just screw up everybody's duck hunt.
Do what?
It would screw up everybody's dove hunt. It's the old lament. I don't know if it's true, but every time you had doves, and then opening weekend, everybody shows up. And you don't they're cutting corn.
Yeah, over there.
They're cutting
not
corn
here,
over
right.
there. Yeah, they're always cutting corn somewhere else. Yeah. But
everything, the soybeans, it's thick as it can be in Kansas. The grass, they've had quite a bit of rain, so all the grass is grown and it's really tall. The corn is real tall. And a lot of the corn is still green, so,
They don't plant as early. Obviously, they're way further north.
They plant later. And then the soybeans are really green and lush. And, some of the beans you can see over, late in the afternoon or early morning, you can see deer in the soybean fields back closer to the wood line.
They still in velvet? They're bucks?
Yeah, they're starting to – we got our cameras out, and this week, end of last week, all the deer – had velvet on the horns that we got pictures of. This week, about half of them, they're shedding their velvet right now.
Okay.
Yeah. usually when bow season opens or by the middle of September, I'd say 95% of the deer have the velvet off their horns. The year before last, one of the muzzleloader hunters killed one in velvet. It was a really nice deer. It was like a 150-something, I forget, 11-point or something, but big, heavy horn, you know, really nice, but it was had velvet on it.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah, and that same guy, this is kind of amazing, too. Now, this is last year was the third year in a row that he got his muzzleloader license, and opening day of muzzleloader season, he killed a buck.
Now, explain, too, that you're not guaranteed. I mean, for out-of-staters, you're not guaranteed.
No, you're not guaranteed for a tag. There's seven of us in the club, but we got a couple of family members to apply for tags, too, this mm-hmm. year because we knew everybody wasn't going to get a tag. So we wanted to – trying to make the farmers happy and, you know, give them the income.
Right.
Because there's only seven, and if, you know, only a few of us get tags, and they don't get a lot of money. So nine people applied, and only three people got tags.
Really?
Three out of nine. Lucky, I was one of them. Now, my grandson got a tag last year. I didn't.
Right.
He didn't get one this year.
Y'all think about how, I mean, it's great, to, you know, and I drew a Kansas tag 2 years ago. Didn't end up using it, but how lucky we are at home. Now, we don't have yes. the deer they have in Kansas, but the idea is that you can figure out you're going deer hunting and then buy that license and go that day, whenever that is.
Yeah, well, the residents can do that.
Yeah, but out of state, somebody
out of state can do the same.
They somebody from Florida or Georgia can drive in here and buy a license.
Yeah. Now, Dylan followed us up there. My grandson.
That's your grandson.
Yeah, my grandson Dylan followed us up there, and of course he didn't get a tag, so he went to Missouri and just looked at some public places over mm-hmm. there, and he went and knocked on some farmers' doors.
Yeah.
And
did he get a permission?
I think he's got two that looks like Ooh. He's going to be able to hunt on.
Good for him.
How about that?
That's a thing. That's a throwback to the past of getting permissions.
One of them was Saturday afternoon. He was riding around, and, you know, it was getting late, and deer starting to come out in some of the fields, and he rides by this field, and there's like $6 from 140 to 160 or 170 in the field.
I'd be like, knock, knock, knock.
Yeah, well, the next morning, he went and knocked on that guy's door, and it's amazing. He loves shrimp, and he likes to fish.
Now, that is a great combination.
So Dylan talked to him, so it looks like we're going to have to take him fishing, and we'll get him some shrimp.
That's a great deal. Listen, we did the shrimp thing back in the day when we used to get permissions to duck hunt up in the Delta.
Yeah.
In Mississippi. Yeah, a little bit in Arkansas. Most of our stuff was in Mississippi. And we paid for our, you know, paid air quotes here for our hunting. We'd bring in shrimp and oysters up from home.
That's right.
And also, when I was in college, we'd go work cotton harvest with this one guy because he needed labor.
A little help, yeah.
He needed labor.
You do and, what you need to do.
And we went and did that. And then he'd say, all right, boys, all three of those fields y'all can hunt. I'm dropping the boards on them, flooding them. And, I mean, we were like pigs and you know what.
Yeah, you know, that's what you do. I mean, when I went up this past week, I took 60 pounds of boiled crabs.
Nice.
And gumbo, you know. So they loved it. And I always take something up there for them to eat, some boiled shrimp mm-hmm. or
something they don't have, right.
Fried shrimp, whatever. And I asked them, I said, we was all sitting together. I said, all right, all the stuff I bring up here for y'all to eat, I never know what y'all like the best.
Right.
If I'm coming back up here in a month, what would y'all like me to fix for y'all? And all of them just about simultaneously said, fried shrimp.
We got you.
So that's what we're going to do. Next time we go up, we'll do fried shrimp.
Okay. That's pretty good, though, that he's got permissions in Missouri.
Yeah, two places. When he talked to that guy, my grandson talked to that one guy, he said, listen, I've got a buddy over here, you know, go over there and talk to him and see if he'll let you hunt over there, you know. And so he did. He went over and talked to him, and it's the same thing. He likes shrimp, and he likes to fish. So anyway, it looks like he's got – either one or two of those places are going to work
pretty
out
good
for
stuff.
Him, you know, to hunt. And that's what you got to do.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to hunt in the Midwest, you got to go out, do some homework, go knock on doors, go look at public places, go do whatever you can do.
You know, it's a lot easier today, too, and I know we get off on this, but it's a lot easier today. We used to do that, like I said, in the duck hunting in the Delta, but we also then did it some my buddy and I that bird hunted out in Nebraska and Kansas, bird hunting being like pheasants and quail.
Right.
And we just have to try to figure out who owned what. You know, and not a plug for Onyx. I run Onyx a bunch. There's other programs, but I run Onyx. And I can't imagine if we'd had that back then to be able to pull up and say, whose field is that? And
that's
hit
right.
it and know whose field that is and be able to talk to the right person. Because how many times in the past we'd say, there'd be the closest house. They'd say, oh, no, that's not me. I just live here. So-and-so out of this town
that's
farms
right.
this or something like that.
That's
so.
Right. Yeah. So, having that tool, Onyx, or there's a couple of other ones
yeah.
out there, but Onyx, I mean, that's a good tool to have. And in Missouri, you don't have to draw for tags.
Just over-counter?
Over-counter, go get a tag. So for an out-of-stater, that works pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll bring it back here at home when we return because the Outdoor Expo coming up, G&D Outdoor Expo, comes up in less than a week. And one of the guest speakers is going to join us here in a second, Mike Severing, trapping predator control as a wildlife management tool. This is he's a pro in this, and he's going to join us next on the show. Y'all stay right there. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along. And be busy calling Mike's grandson after the show, see if I can get in with him on his permission in Missouri. Is he going to bow? Is he waiting to the rut, or is he going to hunt?
Oh, he's bow hunting. Yeah, he's going to hunt the rut. Hopefully, if that works out.
Okay, Dylan, if
you're listening. Gun season opens up there. I think like November the 16th or
mm-hmm.
something
after the rut.
No, well, the rut's still going on the 16th through Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So they get to hunt the rut. With rifles up there.
I'm taking the boat. Taking the boat of the woods. I'm going to rut hunt this year in Pennsylvania. I didn't tell you. I'm not going to hunt the later one. I'm going to hunt, beginning in November. But that's another show. We'll talk about that. Because coming up just a week from today, we'll be in day two of the G&D Farms Outdoor and Wildlife Expo. We're back again. Have been there since the inception. I'll do the midday show out there on Friday. But you and I, Mike, we're doing an outdoor show from 11 to noon. And while we're there doing that, this man is going to be out there as well and part of the presenting, the people talking to us, giving the seminars out there. Good to meet Mike Severing. Trapping and predator control as a wildlife management tool is what he'll be talking about at the event. And he joins us now on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike, thank you.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here.
And if Mike Ward doesn't want to out me, I'll out myself while we're in the news break. This Mike and I, Severing and I, were talking about tomatoes, but that's a whole other show. Got me.
I never even heard of those tomatoes before.
Sand Mountain.
Never heard of Sand Mountain tomatoes.
What state are you? You're from Alabama. What's wrong with you, man?
He must not get out much.
He does not.
Well, I don't eat tomatoes. I eat everything.
First strike
garden,
against him, Mike.
cantaloupe and tomatoes, about two things I about don't.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of stuff.
Squash, tomatoes, and. Cantaloupe. I don't eat that. Everything else I do, that's bad.
I got a co-host and a best friend here who is older than me but eats like a seven-year-old. But don't worry, Mike, we'll leave all that. So you and I are men that are on the – Mike Severing and I are men on the same page here, so we might have to do a show in the future on tomatoes. But let's talk about the presentation you're going to be doing at the Outdoor Expo, Trapping and Predator Control as Wildlife Management Tool. Kind of talk about your history in trapping.
Well, I've been trapping for 50 years, right around 50 years. I actually put myself through graduate school, made enough money off of fur to pay for my graduate level studies.
That tells me this man was trapping in the 70s and early 80s. Am I right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, when there was some money in fur.
A red fox, not even skinned, was a $100 bill. You just had to take him on carcass, $100 a red.
Man.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, coons were $35 to $45.
I've heard, so I didn't.
Today, you could be a millionaire.
I mean
there's so many coons.
That price didn't hold up, I can assure you.
Yeah.
No, but it was, I read about it. I wasn't trapping back then. Other than a stick with a box and try and trap a bird in my backyard kind of stuff. But I did hear the stories about what it was bringing. And you paid for graduate school with that. $100 in 1980s money, too. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go out and catch five red foxes in a day, that's half a grand right there for you.
Yeah, and back then, that's a lot of money. So today,
I'll tell you, I'm going to give you a good story. Of course, being in graduate school, I didn't have a lot of money, so I went
I went by a place, a loan institution. I walked in there and I said, I need to get a loan for $300. He said, you working? I said, no, sir, I'm not working, but I'm trapping. He just laughed. He said, you can't make nothing like that. I said, I've got two reds in the back of the truck. That's $200. He said, sign here.
So that's all the collateral I needed, son.
Bring me a red a week. Yeah. So is there any money in trapping anymore at all?
Not really. Well, there is, but it's not in the fur itself. It's more of nuisance businesses have opened up everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are contracting to take care of coyotes and coons and beavers and just a variety of things. There's good money in it. But I'll be quite honest, a lot of people think you can sell that fur still for $400 or $500, and they watch too much TV, I think. those prices aren't in existence. A beaver right now, a skinned beaver hide, just skinned and rolled up and froze, is $8.
Oh, and if you've done skinned them, I mean you're probably losing money on that deal. I've got in the round because I'm a throwback. I'll skin my beavers out and put them in the round because I think I'm Jim Bridger or something. I do it for fun. But I'd probably pay $8 to have it skinned. That's what I'm saying, y'all. Would you have thought about it back then, Mike, that the money would be in somebody asking you to come trap versus you asking somebody if you could trap on their property?
No, that was never heard of back then.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody and their grandma at that time was setting steel in the ground. When you're talking that kind of money, I know guys that bought brand new vehicles with their money for checks. So.
I bet. Yeah. I mean, that was big money back then.
Yeah, so I'll take it today.
$20 a coon?
In those days, I mean, think about, what that would, I don't know, I have my calculator here to figure what the inflation says that is worth now, but it'd be a lot more.
But not only that, I mean, you could sell the fur, but then there's a lot of people that would eat the meat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you probably sold some meat too, didn't you?
It wasn't legal to sell meat in Kentucky when I was going to school up there, so it just purely hides.
Okay.
So let's take it forward to where we are today, and there has been, at least from where I sit, a comeback for trapping. People interested, like you said, because of their abandoning wildlife, right? I mean, that's kind of what's brought people back to trapping.
It is, and I'll tell you, I worked for the state for 30 years as the fur biologist here in Alabama, and I was also a DMP, or deer management biologist. A lot of times I'd go to a hunting club and they'd show me everything they've done to improve the deer population, which is good stuff. But the simple question I would ask them, who's controlling your predators? And this goes back 20 years ago. They'd look at you like, huh? Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? Predators, what do they got to do with it?
Yeah.
And there's a complete reversal now. These landowners are more involved. They're more educated about predator control. Or say a landowner wants more turkeys. What species do you think is going to be detrimental to a turkey population?
You want
coons and possums, ground nesting predators.
That's right.
That's why I run. That's why every year the number of DPs I run annually on that is, it just every year increases more and more I think that's a great, get your opinion, but that's a great entry point too. When I do trapping shows here and we talk with folks, like if you're not sure, I don't know about setting this. Get DPs, y'all. It's easy.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, several years back, probably five, I had a call from Mobile, and it was the backyard chicken producers.
Okay.
They called me and said, can you come down and give us a talk on predator control? And I said, sure. So I drove down there, walked in the room, a bunch of elderly ladies sitting there, and I started talking about trapping and DPs and what you can do to control the predators to save your chicken flock and things like that. And, they welcomed me with open arms. The things I was telling them was brand new to them.
Huh.
And I showed them how to do it the right way, where it was a humane way to do it. And after that show, within weeks, I had ladies calling me here on my personal phone saying, you're wonderful. The things you taught us are saving our chickens.
Yeah.
So, you know, you never know what kind of impact you're going to make.
And I think about the coon situation, too, and obviously possums as well, but the numbers of coons, what changed? I mean, quit having people trapping them back in the day. Nobody trapping them. And then a lot more corn on the ground these days. And, I mean, if you give that she-coon that kind of food, I mean, she's going to have more babies. I mean, I'm not a biologist. I would defer to y'all, but, I mean, going to have more babies and, you know, those babies are going to have a better chance of surviving. They're going to have more babies. I mean, that's what it seems like to me.
It is. I mean, a coon's going to have so many numbers, so many young per year, just one litter, not two litters like possums. They can have up to two, possibly three litters. And that's a heck of a possum crop coming out. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of it has got to do with the disease aspect, too. You get a population built up too high, distemper will run through it and take them down to where they need to be. I've seen that over the years working for the state in isolated pockets. The spread of rabies, primarily east of the Coosa River system, and that was all because of reintroduction of coons years and years ago up in the New England states. Rabies has progressively moved to the southeast. And the line presently, or if I remember correctly, is the Coosa River. You get a few cases west of the Coosa, but very few.
Yeah. Let's keep that. Hey, another reason to keep that water flow high in the Coosa, y'all.
Yeah.
Keep them boated off.
Well, the problem is you get people that, and I'm sure they still call the state, you know, they find a injured coon or a young coon, they want to raise it. Well, it's illegal. Can't possess those animals, any of them, cannot possess them. And they'll move them, they'll raise them, they'll transport them somewhere else, and all you're doing is you're moving a biological package. Whatever that coon's got in him or on him, you're moving it to a different area of the state. So you're translocating disease or parasites, which is going to impact those indigenous populations of animals.
Yeah, which is true. I think that message needs to go out more because I don't think people think it through. I mean, I talk about I live in the country, and it's been more than once, twice now, that I could pull off airport on the road I live off of, and there's a guy there with a live catch trap pitching out coons they caught in the city. I'm like, yeah, thank you, man. I didn't need more coons out here. But, I mean, you can look at how many invasive species in Florida were turned loose by somebody had them as a pet, and they thought, hey, we'll just turn it loose in the water here, and look what we're dealing with.
Same principle. Yep, same thing.
So when you're presenting on the event here at G&D Outdoor Expo, what are you talking to people? Are you talking to, like, getting them in to trapping or advanced techniques? What's your conversation?
Well, it's basically going to be an introduction to it because a lot of people don't know a lot about it anymore. I've had people in the past say, you mean trapping's still legal? They don't understand that you can still do that legally, and it is a sound wildlife management practice. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about coon predation. I want to talk about coyote predation. Talk a little bit about beavers and what kind of an impact they're having on our infrasystems and our timber industry, things like that, and give them some techniques on how to control these things.
Yeah, that's, you know, best practices. That's a nice thing. If you're just getting into it, learn how to do it, and then you know, let somebody else tell you how to, I mean, move you along the, instead of having to learn, like, on your own. Well, that doesn't work, and that doesn't work.
Well,
you know.
Over the years, I've seen something happen. There's been a total reversal in the way trappers think. Of course, when I was doing it in college and I was getting $100 for a red fox, I wasn't telling anybody how I was catching them.
That's right.
Because that was money out of my pocket.
Sure. Yep.
Well, nowadays, with the price of fur down, there's been a total resurgence of the old trappers passing that information on to the younger kids. You know, I started a program in Alabama 20 years ago with the state, doing trapping workshops all over the state. Like I said, it's been 20 years, and our numbers have not decreased. We still get 200 to 300 students per year coming to these workshops.
Well, you made a difference.
More
then.
Young students. Yeah, absolutely. More young people, more landowners are interested in it. It's a good thing. And, you know, I'll talk about that also. We've got programs coming up this year again. So I look forward to teaching those folks.
Hey, if you can hold on 1 second, we'll come right back and get more with Mike right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Yeah, he's going to be part of the lineup at the G&D Farms Outdoor and Wildlife Expo. And we've got a lot to learn. We've got a guy who can teach us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along. And yeah, this time next week, we'll be in person 11 o'clock to noon at the G&D Farms Outdoor and Wildlife Expo. So come by and visit with us. But make sure you're checking in on the seminar series. And part of that is our guest right now, Mike Severing, trapping and predator control as a wildlife management tool. Obviously, like you said, you've been teaching folks here in the state for a long time. And I like the fact that we're getting taught by somebody who made money from it. I mean, there's nothing that teaches you how to do something better than you depend on it for money.
If you got to make a living out of it, you got to be good at it.
You get good at it. So, yep. Mike, that's a thing. That gets my attention for sure.
It is. I mean, the money ain't good like it used to be, but...
No, but you did it. Like, when you learn, when you cut your teeth, I mean, like you said, you had to be better than the next guy. It's not like there were a bunch of untrapped, you know, areas, and you were just going in there, a bunch of dumb animals. You had to learn to catch those, that fox or whatever, or that, you know, that coon that nobody else trapped.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you this. You know, some people say, well, I know it all, basically. I don't claim to know everything. I learn something every day from an animal. If I go in the woods and I don't learn something every day, I'm not doing my job.
Yeah. Well, I've often said, I mean, the best woodsman out there, if you look at somebody, you're talking about who can go kill a deer or a turkey, find somebody who can trap. Because y'all pay so much more attention.
Well, that's it. Exactly right. There's so much detail laying out there, you just got to learn how to analyze it and figure out what it means, and you can use it to your advantage then.
I wish I had... Well, we'll do this. In the future, we're going to have you on for a lot longer because, I mean, there's so many questions, you know, as a guy that has so much to learn about this, I could ask somebody like you. Let's go to the scent debate for a second. I'm not talking about lure scent. I'm talking about human scent. You know, when I first started, Lord knows, if I could have gotten one of those suits like they wear in the movies where there's a biological outbreak or something, I'd have had that on. But I had, you know, I had rubber gloves sprayed down, everything. Uh-huh. And then, you know, I had somebody who was – older guy who trapped a bunch, he said, son, you can do that, and he still smells you on that trap. And I went from that to, I mean, I'll wear rubber gloves sometimes on coyote sets and all that, but a lot of times I'm just, especially on my DPs and all that, I just barehanded. What do you think?
Yeah, well, DP's a different animal.
The coons and possums don't care.
Coons are not that wary of scent.
What about a coyote?
Well, if you're dealing with a coyote or a red fox, you're dealing with a different creature. Totally.
Do you, Mike, wear rubber gloves? What do you do before you make those sets?
I used to, and I'll be quite honest with you, I don't anymore. The only time I wear rubber gloves is when I'm putting my bait and lure out.
Mm-hmm.
I take my gloves off, and then I start handling the trap. My traps are all clean if they get bloody or whatever. I pull them and re-dye them and wax them for the next week or whatever. But the problem is if you keep handling the traps with a pair of gloves and then you go and you grab your lure or bait or whatever, you've got that scent on your glove. Now the scent has been transferred to the trap.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever walk up on a coyote set and it's been dug out, he smelled that trap. He smelled that lure on that trap. He dug it out. I mean, I have seen coyotes and foxes especially dig a trap out of the ground and not throw it. It's sitting there still ready to spring, but they've never fired it.
He's explaining what's happened because in my history, I've had more than one. I've had plenty of traps dug up. Yeah. I've absolutely come up there, and they've dug the hole, there's nothing to trap, and, you know, they went and got the lure. But, yeah, I've had dug-up traps a lot of times. So that's what's happening.
Absolutely. Huh. Yeah, it is. It's scent-related, yes, sir. That's the bait or lure or urine you're using. And you may have dripped some in there. Say you make a dirt hole set, which is a traditional fox-coyote type set. When you throw that lure or bait or whatever in there, you may drip a little bit right on the trap itself and not even notice it. You've got to be real cautious when you're throwing that in there.
See, and I always thought it was like, you know, I thought that coyote's so smart that he came in there because, you know, I have the pan set where he's going to step into it to get hit the where the scent is or the bait is. I'm like, oh, he just knew it was there and dug it up to make a way to get in there. But you're saying it's something I did, maybe leaving a scent on that he's interested in that before he even gets to where, you know, the next step is, where the bait is.
Yeah, to a certain aspect of it, yes. I mean, if the trap's dirty and you're putting it out in the ground, he's going to smell it first off anyway. So go, always be prepared. Use clean equipment. If equipment gets dirty, take it out and replace it with a clean trap to eliminate that scent problem. Now, I have had coyotes, say, work a flat set. A flat set's nothing but a rock. Spray a little urine on it, and you back it off, the trap off, nine inches, 9 3. And they'll throw that trap, or they'll dig it out. In that case, I'll remake that same set, let that trap lay there. He knows it's there. I'll come back off 3 feet from that flat set and put another trap in and blend it, make what's called a gang set. He'll circle that area trying to get into that. He's going to step in that secondary trap.
Yeah, well, he's focused on the one he knows where it is. He doesn't know where that other
absolutely.
One is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing. Yeah. Those animals are smart animals. You know, they, and their nose, it's just hard to trick their nose.
It is. Yeah. It is. You know, and a lot of it's some of the bait and lure you use. I mean, there was a guy out west, Major Boddicker. He worked for Wildlife Services for years. He was a wolf trapper and coyote trapper. He's written numerous articles in these trapping magazines. I read one time where he took his ashtray and dumped it out. And use that as an attractant. Something different.
Yep.
Something they've never smelled.
Huh. Just something they're just curious and want to come in there and just smell, what is that?
That's right.
What you're talking about?
Yeah.
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 How about that? Would have never thought of that.
A lot of lure that I use or bait that I use, it's either got beaver in it or it's got beaver castor in it. Rule of thumb, coyotes and cats love castor, love beaver meat.
Save your beaver meat for your coyote sets.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Huh. Very good. Yeah. Well, listen, this is the tip of the iceberg when we come out and check you out at the Outdoor and Wildlife Expo for G&D coming up next week. Mike, I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And seriously, I'm gonna get bug you when we're out there. We're going to get you back on for a whole hour on the show soon.
Okay, that'd be fine. No problem.
Thank you, Mike.
Right, there it is. Mike Sievering, Trapping and Predator Control is a wildlife management tool. One of the many speakers that's going to be at the G&D Outdoor Expo. All right, we'll see you from out there next week for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.